Parks Committee. We do have a quorum here. We're Vice Chair Joe Green, Representative Brian Porter, Representative Mulder, and myself, Chairman Bill Hudson. Today, we are going to be going on teleconference, I believe, for the last three bills that we have here. We're going to take up House Bill 302, and we have with us the prime sponsor of that bill, Representative Navarre. Mike, would you join us, please? And we'd like to get right into House Bill 302.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Committee members, for the record, my name is Mike Navarre. I represent District 9 in the legislature. House Bill 302 is actually part of a more comprehensive workers' comp bill that passed the legislature and was subsequently vetoed by the governor. It's a fairly small item. It deals with one court case where employer was held responsible for an injury that happened on a softball field. It was voluntary activity that the employee was doing, but the court held that because the legislature defined it as facility and not on the employer's premises, they were liable. And the crux of it is the argument that swayed them was that if the employer pays league fees to help rent the facilities, then they stretched it to mean that it, therefore, they were providing the facilities. And what it results in is potential that businesses, one, won't be willing to sponsor softball teams or won't want their employees playing on the softball teams. It's not strictly a softball bill. That's what my interest is because I'm an avid softball player. So it's merely a change in the definition section to allow that employee-sanctioned activities don't include recreational activities unless it's at a remote job site or on the employment premises.
Any questions of the committee? It appears to be fairly straightforward to me, and I think it picks up a loophole. Representative Porter?
Just want to make sure it covers golf, too.
Is there anyone else here that wishes to testify on this bill? All right. Chair will entertain a motion. Representative Mulder?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move HB 302. I don't believe there are fiscal notes, are there?
Yeah, there is. Zero.
With the accompanying zero fiscal note from committee with individual recommendations.
Any objections? Hearing none. The bill is moved out of committee with individual recommendations with a zero fiscal note. Thank you, Mike. Welcome to stay with us, and we'll probably give you Joe Sinton's proxy. If you behave. Next, we're going to take up House Bill 309. House Bill 309, the prime sponsor is here. Gene, Representative Terrio, would you like to introduce yourself to us, sir, and tell us what this bill is about?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Gene Terrio, representative for House District 33. I do have a sponsor statement that I'd like to read into the record. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this legislation seeks to address a problem recently brought to my attention concerning land disposals along the Dalton Highway. State statutes currently prohibit disposing of state land within 5 miles of the right-of-way of the Dalton Highway for anything other than oil and gas leases or for oil and gas exploration, development, production, or transportation. Also prohibited are material sales for anything other than oil and gas-related activities or for reconstruction or maintenance of the Dalton Highway. The prohibition prevents a private telephone company which is seeking land in order to expand services to Coldfoot from obtaining the necessary acreage. This legislation would solve the problem and authorize the Department of Natural Resources to dispose of land to a licensed public utility or a licensed common carrier. After proposing the legislation to address the communications issue, I was made aware of larger problems concerning leases within the entire Dalton Highway corridor, which affect both the DNR and Department of Transportation and public facilities. Since August 1992, more than 650,000 acres of land at selected sites along the corridor have been transferred to the state from BLM. The land selections encompass several existing BLM leases. Because DNR does not have the authority to renew these leases taken over from the federal government, the state's ability to manage the land in the future is a jeopardy. DNR is also prohibited from removing or disposing of gravel, which is required for improving the airport at Dead Horse and other airports along the Dalton Highway corridor. Also affected is the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, which recommends that the bill be amended to allow disposal of state land and materials for construction, improvement, and maintenance of public facilities. Such an amendment would facilitate work on corridor airports, service roads, access roads, and waysides, as well as the entire length of the Dalton Highway. In response, I have respectfully submitted a sponsor substitute which would allow for non-residential development within development nodes such as Coldfoot and Happy Valley. It would also allow for land and material disposals for reconstruction and maintenance of state highways and construction and maintenance of airports. Mr. Chairman, that's the end of my prepared statement. I would ask that the committee take up the proposed committee substitute and the bill for discussion because it does incorporate those things that I just addressed in my sponsor statement. What I've tried to do in working with the department to try and address the concern of just what exactly is a development node, how much land are we talking about, is to put into this section's statute specific property descriptions so that the people that are concerned that this bill is some kind of a sneaky way of opening up the entire Dalton Highway to massive development hopefully allay some of those fears. In addition, I think it is important to consider that currently, say in Coldfoot, DNR can allow DOT to take gravel products for maintaining the section of the road around Coldfoot. But we also have an airport landing strip in Coldfoot, and DNR has no authority to allow DOT to take any gravel products the airstrip or anything other than the Dalton Highway itself. And that, Mr. Chairman, answer any questions. So the journey. Gallagher signed up on the testimony sheet and could perhaps answer questions.
Take Mr. Gallagher next. So for the committee's purpose, we will be, the chair would entertain a motion to simply adopt the committee substitute for House Bill number 309-216-94 to place it before the committee for action at this time. So Representative Porter, objections? Hearing none. The committee substitute is now effectively the bill we'll be working on. Now the draft of the bill we'll be working on. I'd like next to go to Jerry Gallagher. And
Mr. Chairman, just before Mr. Gallagher, just one other statement. My main intent in initially introducing this bill was to address the communications question. We have a private communication provider that would like to expand services along the Dalton Highway. We have Commerce taking out a place along that corridor right now. People can drive up to a certain point. We have tourism companies that are now starting to use the highway. If we have a private developer that wants to extend communications, I think we should allow them to do so. However, in order to do so, they have to have a little piece of ground in order to put their repeater stations and whatnot, the equipment that they need to do that. I think it would be short-sighted of us to basically say that because there's this overlying concern of allowing any acreage along the corridor to be used, that we disallow that. You know, we've got commerce taking place on the road right now that could use some additional communications, and I think we should pass this bill to allow that to happen.
Representative, the work draft, the committee, the substitute that we have now before us here, can you just give us another quick rundown on the changes between that and the original bill that you put together? Is it simply a more specific the nodes Well, legal description, is that the idea?
Initially, the bill that I had introduced only dealt with the communications question. Now, in addition, we're adding on the description of the development nodes, mm-hmm. which clearly outlines what property development could take place in. And also, if you look on page 2, lines 27 to the end of the page there, where you're talking about the using materials or access to materials, we're clarifying, we're broadening the language where it said that materials could be used for reconstruction or maintenance. It used to say of the highway. Now we're saying state highways or construction or maintenance of airports.
All right, thank you very much. You're welcome to join us, Gene. Mr. Gallagher, would you like to come forward, please? Sir, your name, please, for the record. We'd like to have your testimony.
My name is Jerry Gallagher. I represent the Department of Natural Resources, and the department supports this bill, and we appreciate Representative Terrio's addressing some of our concerns. It was the Department of Natural Resources and Department of Transportation that suggested, brought up the issue of the development nodes to the sponsor, he's been working with us to add that in, and we're very pleased with this CS, and we do support it. And I'd like to emphasize that the language in this bill is not a broad opening of activities on the Hall Road. It simply recognizes generally what's happening there today, and will allow the department to provide for the continuation of some of those activities. As the BLM has given us very limited land along the Hall Road, they've also conveyed that with certain permits, certain leases and things, and we are prohibited under AS-19 from renewing those in most cases, and this would simply allow us to renew those or grant new authorizations for maintenance of airports and some other activities. So this is a fairly narrow authorization. It doesn't open up a Pandora's box along the Hall Road. I'm happy to answer questions.
Are there any questions of the committee? All right. Thank you very much. You hang around, too, because we're going to have some other testimony, and we may need some technical or professional response. I'm going to stick with what we have here first, and then we'll move out on teleconference to Barrow, momentarily Barrow. Next, I'd like Michael Wallery. Please, Michael, come forward.
Good afternoon. My name is Mike Wallery. I'm general counsel for Tanana Chiefs Conference, a regional nonprofit for the interior of Alaska. We'd like to testify against the CS. We really don't have any problems with the original bill as it was introduced, and we really have no problems with the majority of the sponsor's intentions here. There are needs for telecommunications. There is a real need for the department to manage its existing leases that it's inherited. There's a need for gravel on the road. We've been involved in litigation over the safety on the road before. We are very concerned about that. We've had to haul people off the road and treat them in our clinics, and that's a problem, and we really support the idea of having a safe road up there. Use of gravel for airport, that's not a real problem, although I think the North Slope Borough may have some problems with, given the fact that it's got some selections up there that you'd be disposing of, another problem, but I think they can address that. Our concern is that the bill here is overly broad. The CS that has been introduced is overly broad in that it really does open up the Hall Road to an unregulated amount of development. And a little bit of history on the matter, I think, is important. The corridor is a critical part of the state of Alaska, as everybody knows. And The laws that are in effect today are the result of some very careful planning by this body in the past, a balancing of environmental issues, subsistence issues, which, and industrial development of the North Slope, which is critical to the economy of the state. All of those issues came together in the form of the in to create the laws that are currently regulating the corridor. And we continue to support the basic consensus that underlies the existing laws with regards to the regulation of the corridor. There's been a lot of pressure to expand the uses, to expand economic development in the area, which may be inconsistent with the economic interests of the state, preserving that as an industrial support for the North Slope development. There's also inconsistencies with economic development in that area that would negatively impact subsistence, which is our chief concern. There's also a rest of the story I think this committee might be interested in, and that is that the development node concept comes out of a BLM plan that was adopted under the prior federal administration with regards to the Hall Road, which invoked litigation against the BLM. The BLM adopted what's called the Resource Management Plan, known as the RMP, which identified the development of these development nodes and encouraged them. That action by the Bureau, by the BLM, resulted in the filing of a lawsuit by American Rivers, which has just been recently settled by the current administration, which has taken a profoundly different view with regards to the management of the corridor than the prior federal administration. The problem that American Rivers was trying to deal with was exactly this question of development in the corridor, and in its settlement, the Bureau of Land Management agreed to revisit the RMP, and is currently undergoing a comprehensive review of the resource management plan adopted by the Bureau of Land Management. If the state of Alaska were to rely upon the prior plan, which is no longer necessarily valid, to engage in development, you might find yourselves in the middle of another controversy, creating inholdings in federal enclaves and create additional inholder problems. And the next thing you're going to have down here is, much like we've had in mental health trust lands and other areas where the state has engaged in disposals only to find itself at odds with federal land use management policies in other areas of the state, you may end up having inholders here saying we can't use our land the way we intended to, and we are now looking to the state of Alaska to bail us out of this problem. So I think it's very important for this committee to take a look at the settlement and the American Rivers litigation settlement, because we in the Tananaw-Chiefs region are clearly looking at that. And we have a number of problems with the development nodes as currently envisioned. And we would oppose much of the plan of the BLM, and we are involved in dealing with them administratively. I think the major problem with this CES is non-residential disposals. And it is in fact an opening of the door. And all we have to do is look back to the BLM homestead policies in Alaska. When the state when the federal government ceased to have homesteads in Alaska, the primary means of disposal were the trade manufacturing sites. And I think anybody down on the Kenai River is familiar with trade manufacturing sites as a mechanism for disposal of land, government disposal of land. And those trade manufacturing sites oftentimes turned into residential settlement, despite the fact that they were not intended for that. And it caused major problems with inholders. It caused a lot of grief with people receiving those lands, trying to prove up on them, spending lots and lots of money trying to prove up on them, engaged in litigation and adverse. If you're going to engage in settlement, it should be up front. it shouldn't say non-residential settlement, because non-residential settlement in Alaska, the history of non-residential settlement in Alaska has been residential in effect. So we would strongly suggest that that section of the CS be deleted. It solves a lot of problems. Everything that the department says it wants to do up in that area could be done under the CS without that section in it. Gravel's available for airport construction. Gravel's available for highway construction. If there is a communications need up there, there is a public and charitable provision in the CS which covers that. What's not covered is private land disposals. And that's what the non-residential portion of the CS gives you. And we would think that that is inadvisable at this time. If there's any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
Questions? Representative Terrio?
Would that allow the department, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Waller, would that allow the department to renew or renegotiate BLM leases that now come into their control?
It may be necessary to put in something like that, but the bill is much broader than that. It doesn't talk about existing non-residential uses. It talks about non-residential uses, which means anything that anybody can come up with in the future. We don't have any problem with what's going on up there now, but in the renewal of leases, I think that in terms of most of the leases up there, I'm unaware of anything that is not covered under the CS after you delete the non-residential uses. And I haven't been informed that there's anything up there that really is an existing use that couldn't be covered under that. I may be wrong, but if that is a problem, I think we ought to bring it out on the table and see if there is additional language. And we don't have any problem with what's going on up there now. What we don't want to see is a massive land disposal up there that's going to cause additional problems.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next, we're going to go ahead and hear on teleconference. We'll be going to Barrow. And we'll ask Mr. Keith Quintavel from the North Slope Borough to come forward and testify, please.
Well, this is Keith Quintavel. Thank you, Representative Hudson and committee members, for the opportunity to speak. The comments I have on, I guess they were prepared for the House bill, and I guess now there's the committee substitute for SB 210. The subsections of the bill that would allow the disposal of land under 3805.810E would be no problem. 810E very specifically states that only public utilities or common carriers with a demonstrated need for land can obtain the land in this manner. This provision in SB 210 would serve the public interest. Likewise, the subsection allowing for construction or maintenance of airports and highways should also be no problem, as it would be in the public interest for maintenance of airfields at Happy Valley, Saguaron, Franklin's West, Dead Horse, and also the Hall Road itself. The subsection of the bill, however, allowing for development as nodes should not be included for two reasons. And first reason I'll go into is about the North Slope Borough Municipal Land Selection Center, Title 29. The North Slope Borough has some valid land selections at Dead Horse, Franklin Bluffs, and Happy Valley, three of the five sites proposed. Total of a little over 2,000 acres selected under Title 29 at Dead Horse, and almost 1,000 acres selected at Franklin Bluff, and we have almost 3,000 acres selected at Happy Valley. The North Slope Borough interprets 1940-200 prohibitions on 1940-200 to exclude Title 38 type proposals. Our municipal land selections were authorized under Title 29, the municipality section of the Alaska statutes. And for that reason, we feel that if there was any desire to allow development at these nodes at this time. The simplest way to do it, which would not even need the enactment of a new law, would be to survey the North Slope Borough lands that they have already selected. We have asked the Department of Natural Resources in Fairbanks has told us that they cannot convey us the lands along the Hall Road that we have selected under Title 29 because of the prohibition in 1940-200. And they've tried to enlist our support in lifting the prohibitions on all Title 38 type disposals. In January, we asked the Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources, NOAA, for a clarification on this provision. And we feel that if Title 1940-200 is interpreted to the way it's clearly written, where it says the state shall not dispose of land under Title 38, we've got meant to also prohibit land under Title 29, it would have said that. Therefore, we can't understand why the state won't just go ahead and convey our land selection. Another part about the DNR authorizations, they are actually granting some types of authorizations at this time. These are authorizations that don't convey any interest in the land, such as land use permits. And they have a number of guides, hunting guides, up along the Hall Road. Can I get that? And then the other, real quick before I finish, the second reason is that there has never been a land use plan done by the state of Alaska as required by 3804-065. Such as 210 should be based on some type of plan to take these issues in a piecemeal fashion to the requirements of 3804-065. Land use plans required by this statute certainly be a prerequisite to any land disposals such as those in 210. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Any questions of the committee while we have them on the line? Representative Terrio?
Yes, could you read back the three areas, I think it was, that you have the land selections, pending land selections?
Sure. The three areas that we have the land selections actually encompass all of Franklin Bluffs and Happy Valley. We've got about 3,000 acres of selections at Happy Valley. We have about 6,000 acres of selection at Franklin Bluffs. And at Dead Horse, we have just a little over 2,000 acres of selection.
Okay, and just a follow-up question. So if those selections went through, you would or would not want to then be able to sell gravel products from your land for these functions. I'm sorry, I didn't quite follow what you were saying there.
Okay, yeah, I'm sure that we would like to sell gravel. The other thing is, if these are actually development nodes, if they'd be the truck stop or anything like that, that's what we would also like to have the opportunity to provide at these nodes. I guess we don't think that enacting new legislation would be necessary for this type of development to take place, that it can be accomplished under existing laws by conveying the lands to the North Slope Borough under Title 29 and allowing the development to proceed in that fashion.
Thank you, Mr. Quintavelle. There are no other questions at the moment here. Mr. Earl Finkler, City of Barrow.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Earl Finkler, City of Barrow. Mayor Don Long has asked me to attend this meeting and express that the city has been supporting, continues to support the North Slope Borough in their opposition to opening the road and also their concerns about comprehensive planning for the road by all parties involved. That's one point. I have three points. I asked at the last teleconference on this whether there would be any impacts of this legislation on the original purpose of the restrictions, which our understanding was those restrictions were put in to preserve maximum opportunities for the efficient transportation of and support of oil and gas development in that area, whether there be any impact on that. And Mayor Long, also, this may be a peripheral concern to your committee, but the city of Barrow has long been concerned about some other state disposals, in particular the Barrow Airport and some adjacent construction sites for the airport. And he would ask that, and that the Barrow Airport is now emerging as one of the mental health settlement lands. Before dealing with too many other land disposals, if you could get back to some of the requests and concerns of the city of Barrow on some state land disposals in the Barrow area. Those are our concerns. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The whole issue of land disposal that are currently tied up in the mental health trust litigation and argument is gaining some attention by the administration, and we're hopeful that there's some progress taking place there, so perhaps that can help the city of Barrow's interest as that comes forward. If I understand you right, Mr. Quintavelle, since you're probably still there, you have found some accommodation with many of the intents of this legislation, but concerns in others. And it might help us if you would put together a very short, brief position paper and perhaps some suggestions that you may have on how we can, you know, we can have it both ways here, so that we can try to protect the interests that you have, as well as the prime sponsor and the Department of Natural Resources. Would you do that for us, sir?
Okay, I'll prepare one and see if it can get sent in from our mayor's office.
Fine, and if you'd fax it down to my office, we'll see that it gets properly distributed down here. Thank you both for testifying today. The chair would, I suppose, inquire of the prime sponsor, who's at the table here now. I have nobody else listed to testify. Nobody else here to testify on 309. All right. Representative Terrio, we've heard some suggestions, constructive suggestions. Would you suggest that maybe we should look to see if we can find an amendment to try to accommodate some of those? Sure. Would you be willing to do that?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I don't have a problem with changing the language as long as the end result, you know, that we're covering things that I've identified. Now, a suggestion was made by Mr. Wallery that perhaps we could delete a section and still achieve all the goals. And I would like to hear, I'm not sure whether Mr. Gallagher would have to get in touch with the Division of Lands, head of Division of Lands, to see whether that's so or not, or perhaps he could answer to say that no, you know, we do need this language from their interpretation.
Jerry, would you come forward one more time, please? For the record, please.
Again, this is Jerry Gallagher. I probably would disagree with Mike's,
Mr. Weller's
assessment that we could do a lot of this by deleting what I believe is starting on page 1, line 13. I think that we need that language to dispose of gravel, to issue longer-term leases and whatever necessary for development along the Hall Road.
And I think what the chair will do in this instance then, Gene Terrio, Representative Terrio, is I'll ask you, and if you would as well, Mr. Gallagher, get together with some of the other folks here and perhaps get some information down from the City of Barrow and the North Slope Borough. And if you can get together a revised draft that try to accomplish. It sounds to me, from what I heard at any rate today here, is that there appears to be a great deal of accommodation for what you're trying to accomplish in this bill. And it seems like it's more a matter of, you know, finding the right format here. So if you could
get together, and as soon as you can bring us back a revised draft that you believe satisfies those interests, the committee will take it up again. I'd rather not send it out as long as there's a possibility of making it better. I think that's kind of the way we do things here.
Okay.
So is that the general wishes of the committee? Representative Porter, Green, Williams, you feel that's a pretty good way to work at this thing?
Also, right. Mr. Chairman, Senate Bill 210, which was referred to, is a similar bill that Senator Sharp had, which I'm not sure, I think it passed out of the Senate today, actually, and we'll come over and replace this. I'm not sure whether it was up for reconsideration, whether it was reconsidered or not. But this bill was originally scheduled on Tuesday, back before the Senate bill came up on the floor, and I wasn't sure what the outcome of the debate would be. The language is slightly different than is different than my proposed CS. I think they still just make reference to developmental nodes instead of having actual property descriptions. So my intent is to certainly work with Senator Sharp when his bill is officially over. So
the chair would like that, and then we'll go ahead and hold this over and ask if you would work with that and then help the committee understand probably Senator Sharp's bill will be coming over now. And I'd like to thank everyone who has testified and been on the line today for this bill. And with that, we're going to move on now to House Bill 300.
Did we adopt the CS on
this last one? We did. We adopted the CS for 309. But it now appears as though we're probably going to end up with a Senate bill. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be the vehicle. Okay.
And your sponsor's statement.
All right. It, as is customary, since this is a House Labor and Commerce Committee bill, as the chair of this committee, I'll go ahead and introduce the committee to House Bill 300. This is an act relating to civil liability for commercial recreational activities. And according to Adventure Travel Society, adventure travel and ecotourism segments of the travel industry are growing at a rate of 20% a year. The economic contributions of Alaska's wilderness-based tourism are undoubtedly important. The AWRTA estimates that there are over 2,000 natural resource-dependent tourism businesses in Alaska, and although few of these businesses employ upwards of 50 people, many are small, supporting or contributing to the income of only a few families. They are, however, Alaska-based and vital to local employment, and unlike larger recreational activities or outfits, these businesses keep their dollars in Alaska. They purchase their goods here, they employ local residents, they remain in state, and they spend the dollars that they make here, and they are thus providing both economic diversity and stability to many communities. And many of these small businesses are facing an uncertain future due to the high costs associated with insurance premiums and operations of their businesses. In order to encourage the continuance and survival of these popular outdoor recreational activities, some kind of structure is needed to assure that both operators and participants become knowledgeable of and assume responsibilities for inherent risks. It's no new subject to this committee. House Bill 300 was introduced to establish the responsibilities of persons who operate and participate in commercial recreational activities. It in no way relieves recreational businesses or operators from liability. House Bill 300 simply establishes a framework that may help in the litigation process by stating that the state recognizes your responsibilities as an operator and your responsibilities as a participant. It lays out both. It also sends a message that steps have been taken to educate both the operator and participant as to the nature of these responsibilities. And while insurance premiums are based on many factors, including the history of claims, similar legislation in Colorado has had the effect of lowering insurance premiums 15% to 20%. That obviously is one of our stated goals. We do have three amendments that we'll ask the committee to consider and take up here. The first amendment, I might add, is on page 2, line 13. and adds that participants are responsible for their children who are under the age of 18. It was deemed necessary to add that amendment. This amendment...
Before or after animals, sir?
Now, wait a minute.
After
this amendment is a response to concerns that there is sometimes the assumption on the part of parents that they are off duty because they're on vacation. This amendment would clarify that operators responsible for ensuring the safety of all their clients does not absolve parents from their responsibilities as parents. Amendment number 2, page 2, line 24, requires employees who are in contact with participants be trained in CPR as the minimum standard of first aid for which operators will be responsible. And amendment number 3, page 3, line 2 to 4, deletes the definition of premises, which was in an earlier draft of the bill and is now determined not relevant to the final copy. So those are the three amendments. The bill is before you. It was brought by tourism interest, and particularly ecotourism. People feel that, much like the skiing bill, I think, or the ski liability bill that we heard and I think passed out of the House last year. So the chair wishes to hear now, I think, from some of the other folks that have asked to testify on this. We'll start here with Bart Henderson from Haines. Bart, welcome to the committee, and if you would give us your name and your testimony on this bill, sir.
All right, I'm Bart Henderson, Haines, Alaska. I'm the owner of Chilkat Guides, Limited in Haines. I employ about 35 people through the summertime and in the guiding industry. And a couple of things that I'm glad to see this bill is up, because it's something that's very needed in our industry. And a couple of things that you covered most of it, but two of the other things that I think are really important are that not only are insurance premiums going up, but the carriers, the number of carriers is almost gone. My industry is mostly in a rafting business, and to my knowledge, there are only two choices in the United States of insurance carriers. And if once you get down that low, it wouldn't really take very much to upset the apple cart completely, and we would no longer have insurance. All the landowners, the state, all the federal, the BLM, the Forest Service, the Park Service, everyone we deal with require us to carry insurance and some pretty hefty insurances, and ask that we and stipulate that we also name them as also insureds on our insurance policy. So we wouldn't even have the choice of running without insurance. Insurance is mandated to us. The other aspect in this is that many of us rely on the cruise ship businesses to pre-sell our tours, and it doesn't take very many cases to dry up that big segment of business to us, because the many of the frivolous cases that are brought against members of our industry, most all of them try and bring in as many deep pockets as they can find around them. And as we've seen several we see it several times a year, where they'll name the closest deep pockets will be the cruise line industry, and I know it really makes the cruise line industries very gun shy to sell anything that has any sort of inherent risk in it. And that's very unfortunate, because I think it's the type of industry that really portrays the image of Alaska that the outside world really sees, and it would be a real shame to see that whole industry dry up and go away with the fishing and the rafting and everybody else involved. So anything we can do to help support this as an industry, we're kind of a ragtag bunch of individuals. We don't have a lot of lobbyists around, and so we're really glad
that's to your benefit.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, good, because we don't have them. So anyway, that's we want to thank you guys, and anything we can do to help or answer questions, be glad to.
Thank you, Bart. We do have a question from Representative Joe Green, Vice Chair.
Bart, you indicated that there were maybe down to a couple of insurers now that will do this. Have you talked to them? If something like this were to pass, we've been dealing, of course, with tort reform and that side of thing, and there's always the implied or even actually stated reduction of insurance, and in your case, maybe the fact that they'd continue to insure you. Have you discussed this with those insurance brokers?
I haven't, but I'd be glad to, and I could do it fairly quickly because there's only two of them. It's one of those things that I know them all because every year I shop at both stores, and so it would be an easy thing to find out.
Well, it's not necessary for this, or I don't think for me. I was just wondering if the thing that I was really driving at, you made the comment that there are fewer and fewer people. Now it's down to two, and apparently if either or both of them happen to decide not to, you're out of business?
Well, that's certainly the implication there would be, is that we would be out of business. I think any time that you only have two insurers in the business, it's not only risky that it goes away, but it drives the price up because there's not very much competition in it. In fact, one of the two is actually an association of guides that have gotten together and a self-retained insurance business. So that, in effect, really, there's only one sort of outside insurance company, and the other one is sort of a what they call a self-retained insurance pool. So it's down there. In my estimation, I tell you, I hate to be in that position to only have two places to go for insurance. They really have you over the barrel, and it's really unfortunate. I think that it's got to be really one of the main things is that the way the laws read now, I think they're so ambiguous, and they leave open the door for every time there's a small incident that people will go, well, okay, I won't sue them for $100,000 because it's worth it to fight it. So I'll sue for $40,000 because the insurance company will just settle with me for $40,000 because it's cheaper to settle for $40,000 than it will be to fight it. And so a bill like this, at least gives the insurance companies a little bit more incentive to fight the suits. And I think that's those.
I'm just going to give a very, very brief statement on ABA's position on House Bill 300. I'm representing a board of directors of the Alaska Visitors Association and about 800 of its voting members. So we do have a lot of recreational tourism activities within our membership. And we are extremely concerned, as Bart has told us earlier, on the rising cost of liability insurance. And as a fact, ABA has taken that on as a major task to try to identify liability insurance coverage in an association form so that we can help our clients, our actual members, see a reduction in that. But at no time would we stand for the actual client not receiving a safe environment. So I think that this bill that you have before you today is a win-win situation for the tourism industry, for our client, the visitor, or those people that actually take part in a recreational activity, which could be many of us Alaskans, but also for the business operator that are trying to make a living in the tourism industry and the recreational activity industry. It's very important for us to be able to explain to our visitor and to our user of the inherent risk. It doesn't seem like a big deal to us to get on a helicopter and go and step onto a glacier, and you're going to hear that a little later, but to an 80-year-old woman who may not have the greatest footing, it may be a real potential problem for her, and she has to be aware of the risk and what's happening. It's not just a day ride. I mean, it's an activity that creates the potential for injury. So ABA comes to you today and says that we hope that you would see favor in this bill. It certainly has our support and our endorsement, and we'd like to see this happen as soon as possible.
Thank you very much, Karen. Questions? All right. Next we'll go to Bob Engelbrand as he comes flying in.
Thanks for delaying this until I can arrive. I want to thank the committee for introducing this.
For the record, please, Bob, your affiliation.
Oh, Bob Engelbrecht, and I'm on the board of directors of the Alaska Visitors Association. I also manage Temsco Helicopters and the helicopter tour operation. I want to thank the committee for introducing this. This is very welcome to see and very much needed, as Bart and Karen have pointed out. And you know, it's, as you know, it's a fairly simple bill, but it's and it's pretty straightforward, and I think it makes a lot of sense. It basically clarifies what the responsibilities are of participants and operators, and it does it in a way that I think will be beneficial to both. In our operation, we run into the same thing that Bart was talking about. You get a lot of frivolous claims from people that in our case go up on the glacier, and you explain to them that they're going to be walking on a glacier. It's an uneven surface. There's rocks. There's holes. You basically need to watch where you're walking and stepping, just like you would any place other than maybe on a sidewalk, although I try to watch where I'm stepping there too. And some people just don't pay attention to that, and something as simple as tripping over a rock, then you get a claim from an insurance company or an attorney in New York City, and these frivolous claims really can add up. And even in our case, where most of our exposure and liability has to do with the flying end of it and the tremendous amount of equipment that we're operating, that's not where we have the problems. It's with people that slip or fall or trip and scrape their hand, and then you hear from an attorney 4 months later, and as Bart said, there's a claim put in that's high enough that it really irritates you, does more than irritate you, but it's not worth fighting on the part of the insurance company, and they end up settling, and then our rates go up. So I'm very pleased to see this. Like I said in the beginning, I think it balances it pretty well. It not only puts responsibility on the participants, but it also puts responsibility on the operators. And I think the list of things here about making people aware of the risk of the activity that they're undertaking, the first aid training, and we're doing most of that now. But I think that'll be good for standardization in the industry and will help the participants. And so I'm very much in support of this.
Okay, any questions? Thank you, Bob. Next, we're going to go out on teleconference. We have Ann Valdez, Ms. Nancy Lefko.
Mr. Chairman, this is Nancy Lefko speaking. I am president of the Alaska Wilderness Recreation and Tourism Association and owner, along with my husband, of Alaska Wilderness Sailing Safaris. This is a bill that the Alaska Wilderness Recreation and Tourism Association has been working towards for over a year and a half now, and we do wish to express our appreciation to you for introducing the bill. Needless to say, the Alaska Wilderness Recreation and Tourism Association, or ARTA, as we're abbreviated, supports this bill. This bill establishes the responsibilities of tour operators and participants. It increases the safety of commercial recreational activities through better preparedness on the part of tour operators to respond to a medical situation, and increased awareness by trip participants of the inherent risks and a recognition of the responsibilities as trip participants. The bill reduces the likelihood of frivolous suits, which are becoming a significant problem in some parts of the industry, I understand now in Alaska, but also elsewhere. You already have in your folders a letter from ARTA. In response to that letter, Representative Hudson asked me to speak to two items mentioned there. The first is the insurance scams in the tourism industry, and the second was a reference to the insurance paid by our own small tour business, Alaska Wilderness Sailing Safari. I personally have no experience with insurance scams in the tourism industry. Mr. Greenwood, the underwriter for Cab Car Insurance, which is the major insurance agent for Alaskan backcountry tourism, spoke at ARTA's 1993 annual meeting when we had an entire work session devoted to this topic. He mentioned several examples where this legislation would have helped to establish the degree of negligence. He also mentioned some insurance scams. I tried to contact Mr. Greenwood for additional information, but he is away, unfortunately, on a three-week vacation. The one story I remember, and I'm a little bit hesitant to give it to you because it is a memory, concerns a bicycle rental shop. If I remember this correctly, after the standard checkout, renting bicycles were told that they could not ride down certain steep hills because of the wife had not demonstrated sufficient control of the bicycle. The couple agreed, unless go down some hill, provide, use the stop sign instead of a brake. 3 months later, the bicycle shop was served with a $3 million suit for negligence. The insurance company discovered that the couple had done the same thing in a number of other states. What Mr. Greenwood emphasized most was that often the claims are much smaller than $3 million. If they're in the $40,000 less or maybe a little more, the insurance company just agrees to pay it because it's not worth the cost of fighting it. This increases our rates, as other people who have testified have already indicated. We hope that if this legislation were passed, that it would make the determination of negligence easier, save court costs, and reduce our insurance rates. I'd like now to turn to the second question that Representative Hudson raised, and this has to do with our own insurance costs. We have asked business members to each speak to this issue separately. It's not something that we as an organization have collected information on or would want to. We do not, Alaska Wilderness Veterans Park has been in business for 20 years. In fact, we're quite pleased to announce this is our 20th anniversary. We have never had a claim. All our guests sign a liability release form. We are required to have two types of insurance. One is liability insurance for passengers on the boat, and the second is liability insurance for guests when they are ashore in the Chugach National Forest. Our boat liability insurance runs about $2,500 a year. Quotes for the shoreside insurance ranged last year from $855 to $1,133. We took the $855 policy. This covered us for 89 user days in the Chugach National Forest at a cost of $9.83 a day. When you consider that the average length of time our guests actually spent ashore was just 40 minutes last summer, you can see that we are paying about $9.86 for 40 minutes of insurance coverage. The liability insurance for guests aboard one boat is $2,500. Last summer we had 152 onboard user days. This is higher than our shoreside user days because not all our guests go ashore. We are paying $16.40 per day in insurance fees for each guest aboard our boat. Another way of looking at this is that for 89 of our guests who both sailed and went ashore last summer, we paid $26 a day in insurance coverage. And for 63 guests who only sailed, we paid $16.40 a day. I think you will agree that these are very high insurance rates. We are hopeful that if this legislation is passed, that our insurance rates will be reduced. I would like to take up one other item, and this is a request that we have had from our members who have looked at the legislation and given up the office a call. They would like, have suggested that on page 3, section 3, the definition of recreational activity, be amended to include hunting, dog sledding, and llama treks.
Yeah, I know.
If there's any, that's all I have, and I, again, I wish to thank you, and
ARDA
certainly very strongly supports this legislation.
Thank you, Ms. Lefko. As relates to your recommendations to add, we have been informed by counsel that we should resist that temptation, and if anything, perhaps not list anyone so as not to preclude anyone. And the chair has received a suggestion that instead we develop a broad definition of commercial recreational activities and define it as, and I'll say it, a supervised commercial outdoor activity undertaken for the purpose of exercise, relaxation, or pleasure, and leave that so that it would cover any activity that might fit within that. What would you think of that?
Would counsel say whether that included hunting? Our hunting members are most concerned about the question of whether hunting would be included.
Exercise, relaxation, or pleasure.
I don't enjoy it, but somebody else might.
I can recall when I used to hunt, it was a pleasure, seldom relaxing. It was a lot of exercise.
Yeah.
And darn little meat.
I think I have some of the same memories. If hunting would be included with that definition, then yes, we would follow your advice on this.
All right, thank you very much. We may hear from some others on that, too. Thank you very much, Nancy. Next, I'd like to go to Fairbanks, to Mr. Pete Beist, I think.
Greetings, and thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Pete Beist. I appreciate the opportunity to testify on HB 300. I'm testifying for myself this afternoon. I might mention that I'm also a professional member of the Big Game Commercial Services Board, and I was on the Guide Licensing and Control Board before that. I support the concept of this bill that balances the responsibility between the guides and the clients. I specifically wish to address the hunting issue, and you seem to have stolen most of my thunder there. If it was inadvertent that it was left out, perhaps we should include it. I tend to think that your new definition would actually do that. I've been guiding in Alaska for more than 20 years, and my experience has been that the hunting guiding industry has had relatively few accidents. Yet in 1988, the legislature required hunting guides to carry a relatively high, and I might add, relatively expensive level of liability insurance. At that time, my premiums went from about $800 a season to over $2,500 a season, and I was guiding three or four clients and not using an airplane. The folks and activities covered by the present form of the bill, as you define those activities, are not licensed, as we hunting guides are, much less forced to buy insurance under state statute. In summary, I'd just say that the hunting guides play an important part in the hunting and in fact, the tourism industry. They're directly responsible for a large influx of outside dollars that other aspects of the tourism industry sometimes fail to realize. Even the Division of Tourism refuses to promote hunting and hunting guiding. We are an important part. You can tell because in their literature they always count the dollars that we bring in. I'd hope that the legislature would recognize this and show your support by affording hunting guides the same assistance that you're proposing to show the newer recreational activities. I appreciate the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Is it your understanding that hunting guides would not be included in this bill?
As it's written with the definition of recreational activity, I see that hunting is excluded. With the newer definition of recreational activity that you read before to Nancy Letko, I tend to think that's a better approach, because no matter how many things you list, you're going to forget somebody's activity, and I think that all-inclusive approach is probably the better one, and I thank you for it.
Thank you. That's the intention of the chair, that if we do modify that, and we'll entertain an amendment, I think, before we pass this out here today, to that extent, so that it does definitely cover hunting to fit within the exercise, relaxation, pleasure, and supervised commercial outdoor activity. All right, next then we'll go to Anchorage, and we'd like to hear from Eric Williamson.
Okay, my name is Eric Williamson. I'm a registered guide outfitter and also conduct float trips. I represent hunting and sport fishing on the board of directors of the Alaska Wilderness Recreation and Tourism Association. I strongly urge the passage of House Bill 300. The clarification of responsibilities of recreational activity operators and participants allow insurance companies to narrow down the breadth of possible claims. As you said earlier, this has led to lower insurance premiums in states where similar bills have been passed. Liability insurance premiums are presently an excessive burden to many Alaska recreational activity operators. This bill will likely help tourism and and the recreation businesses to continue their substantial contribution to Alaska economy. I also support that deletion of specific activities, so that because I would hope that money would be included under that's all my question.
All right, thank you very much. Next, Jack Kreinheader here. Jack?
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to briefly voice my support for the bill as a customer. For the record, I'm Jack Kreinheader, representing myself. And I think you've heard entirely from industry representatives here. I just want to say, as a consumer of these services and avid outdoor recreationist, I think this bill is not only in the interest of the industry, but also consumers, and not just out-of-state tourists, but all of us here who like to hunt, fish, hike, whatever it is. And I take raft trips with Bart Henderson, and I fly in Bob Engelbrecht's helicopters as often as I can in the summer. And I think it's when you hear about somebody paying $25 a day in insurance costs to go fishing, that's obviously passed on to the customer, and it's just getting unaffordable. And when Bart has to turn to Lloyd's of London for insurance for his raft trips, who's going to be able to afford to take him? So I think it's in all of our interest. One comment, I'm surprised you haven't heard from somebody from the Trial Lawyers Association, who I assume will oppose this, but they would claim to represent the interests of the consumer, but in my opinion, they're representing that fraction of 1% of consumers who might file, in some cases, to be fair, legitimate lawsuits, but in many cases, frivolous lawsuits. But I would oppose that and think this bill is in the interest of consumers as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Jack. That's the extent of our testimony. The chair, first of all, would like to ask the committee to consider adoption of the three amendments that I had initially expressed to you, and I'll take them up one at a time. Amendment number one, page 2, line 13, after person, insert participants' children. At page 2, after line 31, insert a new paragraph to read, children means persons under 18 years of age, and then renumbering the paragraphs. I'd entertain a motion to that adoption of that. Any objection to adopting amendment number 1? Right, so adopted.
We have a copy of it?
It's in the back of your packet.
In the back?
Yeah.
It's way about the last three pages.
Maybe that's why I couldn't find them.
That'll teach you to be efficient.
You have yours, Joe? Yeah. You have another one for Joe here?
13.
Do you have yours?
Yeah, I got mine. Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah, I do.
Any objections to amendment number 1? All right, amendment number 1 is adopted. Amendment number 2, page 2, line 24 and 25, delete basic first aid and insert cardiopulmonary resuscitation, which has been determined to be Representative Porter.
I would suggest that you add it, not delete basic first aid.
I said delete basic first aid and insert.
Why delete basic first aid?
That's actually a certification, and it's...
I've taken a CPR course, and that didn't tell me one thing about how to put a bandage on or anything else, so...
So you want to just add to that?
That's true. Yeah. I would add it, not delete basic first aid.
All right, let's just look at this.
I think the concern about basic first aid came up because it is actually something that you need certification for, and not every user reaches that standard now. We want CPR as a minimum acceptable standard for pedestrian activities, which covers a broad range of them. Basic first aid is getting up there as far as certification, and it's also costly. And a lot of outdoor activities already use it, or ETTs, for example, or EMTs. But requiring basic first aid might be too much for some activities, as opposed to what we're doing now. And maybe someone on
teleconference can respond to that.
Mr. Chairman, would it be possible for me to respond?
Yes, give us your name, please, and respond.
My name is Nancy. We had some discussion on this, and I neglected to include it. I think we would like to at least keep the basic first aid in there. We understand the importance for CPR for certain types of activities, but for many of our backcountry activities, CPR is really only good for 40 minutes to an hour, and there's no way we're going to get a person in many remote areas evacuated in 40 minutes to an hour. And it's much better to have people well-trained in other types of medical responses. It might be better to change it to a level of proficiency in... I'm not really sure myself how to word this, because for the highway and more urban types of outdoor recreational activities, CPR is probably very good. But for the backcountry people, it's not.
But this wouldn't preclude backcountry tours from doing more either.
Yes, please, come up.
Bart Henderson.
Bart.
Mm-hmm. I think that what Nancy's getting at is really the basic first aid, and I think what the lady here is saying is that it is a title of a certification, and perhaps if you don't want to limit yourself, it might be wise not to limit yourself to a specific one. But I think that really that the correct title would be American Red Cross Advanced First Aid, American Red Cross Basic First Aid. I think if you leave it like it is, it's basic first aid training, that... It leaves it open for interpretation, so that those of us that require our guides to have ETT, emergency trauma training, or EMTs, or basic first aid. Just as a note, almost all of the land agencies, Park Service, Forest Service, anybody else requires you to have advanced first aid. So a basic knowledge in first aid is very worthwhile in protecting the consumer's side of things. And I think that it's very good to have it in there listed as a basic knowledge of first aid. And if you may even, if it needs more clarification, say equivalent to the American Red Cross standard first aid or something like this, those courses are actually then defined in numbers of hours of study. You have a basic first aid course is a certain number of hours, advanced first aid course is more, ETT is a little bit more than that, and on up the line.
So, Bart, before you go then, your suggestion was that we amplify basic first aid to designate it, or at least identify it as American Red Cross first aid. Did I understand your? What you just told me?
I think that the way that you've got it, if you just add CPR, that it's probably a good idea, because I think basic first aid and CPR are the minimum things that guys should have, and I think that that's if you leave it like you have it and just add CPR to that, I think that you're better off. If your council says maybe that's a little too vague, then to use the terms equivalent to a basic first aid or American first aid, American Red Cross first aid.
I guess the concern is we're not only talking about guides.
I guess it depends on staff is bringing up a good point of input we had. Let me just kind of put this out on the table. So this was from Alaska Travel Adventures, and his recommendation was that the word basic be replaced by the word reasonable or appropriate. There is a first aid certification, a basic first aid. In some cases, real backcountry trips, basic first aid would be insufficient, while in other circumstances, roadside sightseeing, etc., it would be a burdensome requirement. CPR, he says, is the current industry standard for most pedestrian experiences. And that was the reason that we came in. Representative Porter?
That would be the best... growth industry for attorneys I've ever heard in my life. If you don't define it, then it's just going to get liquidated.
Mm-hmm.
I would suggest that either you add CPR to basic, or spend a lot more time than we've got right now.
Defining it.
Crafting something that's good, and I'm thinking that it may want to respond to the difference between somebody taking a walking tour around Juneau and somebody up on a glacier. Obviously, I think the standards are going to be different. If there's an emergency, 911 emergency response available, the person does not have to have the kinds of skills that you would have to have if you had somebody in the wilderness.
Yeah.
And I think maybe we should recognize
so what if we do this then, and we modify the amendment to page 2, lines 24-25, and we modify it to say insert after basic first aid cardiopulmonary resuscitation, and then have the balance of the paragraph be adjusted to read to that intent. Would that satisfy your interest, Brian, Representative Porter?
That would set a minimum standard, but as indicated, it says train employees who are in contact with participants, and I can envision this office in downtown Juneau or Anchorage or something where the employee that sells the ticket that's got a 911 phone sitting right beside him having to have his training. I don't think it's necessarily a bad idea. It certainly isn't going to hurt anybody, but I don't know how relevant it is.
So what would you recommend?
That at this hour and this time, I don't have enough cognitive stuff left to create the language sitting here, but...
Representative Mulder?
Mr. Chairman, if you think about it in response to what Representative Porter is saying, I appreciate the fact that you have to define it out or it gets litigated. On the other hand, if you lay it in general parameters here of, say you delete basic, there's a line here, basic first aid, say if you delete the word basic, if you say with participants in first aid and CPR, you have set a standard. I mean, it's generally, it's pretty tough to say if you offer some sort of training in first aid, you've got a good defense. It's pretty tough for a person to get sued if they've been trained in some sort of first aid training. And that's pretty generic. Do you see what I'm saying? So in that sense, it's going to be difficult for them, for the person who's going to try and litigate against you, saying you haven't had some sort of first aid training. And CPR is pretty well defined as a training. So if you have first aid and CPR, you've got a general background and you've got a specific that I think pretty well covers you. At least it would seem that way to me.
Mr. Chairman, by way of response, if you don't want to try to deal with the differentiation of exposure, I would suggest leaving what you suggested, basic first aid, which is definable.
Yeah, that's true.
And that is the minimum. What I'm worried about of taking basic off is that somebody would suggest that because of your being in the wilderness, that
should
first aid
more
should
advanced.
Mean EMT or something, you know.
Oh, I see what you're saying now.
Would we keep in or add in the cardiopulmonary resuscitation?
Sure. Right. Would first aid procedures do any good?
I think
you're still so ambiguous that you're just opening up.
I think what we have, yes, Mark, go ahead, please.
I think he brought up an interesting point that the ticket salesperson shouldn't necessarily be included in this. And over here on the next page, in page 3, line 5, recreational activity means a supervised commercial outdoor. Perhaps you could insert instead of in contact with supervising. So it said train employees who are supervising participants.
Don't start that yet, because I got a real problem with that word.
I do too.
Yeah,
that's really going to get you in trouble.
Now, being a lawyer, maybe I better stay out of that one.
Well, all right. Here's what we're going to do then, subject to the committee's acceptance here. We'll modify to simply on page 2, line 24-25, insert after basic first aid cardiopulmonary resuscitation. And the bill next goes to your committee,
yeah,
Brian.
I noticed that, right.
And you have all the attorneys over now. You got an attorney on your staff. And yes, please. Give us your name, please.
Sure. If I might add something, my name is Michael Johnson. I'm a legislative aide to Representative Joe Sitton, who couldn't be here today. I'm not testifying to advance Representative Sitton's interests here. I'm testifying or adding something as a member of a staff working group that met Tuesday to discuss some of the issues that I think led to those three amendments. this is an issue that we really couldn't resolve in that meeting, waiting on some more information, and obviously you gentlemen are having trouble with it as well. We were scared in that meeting that by using the words basic first aid that we were coming close to setting a standard that could be interpreted as the first aid, basic first aid, the Red Cross basic first aid course, and didn't want to do that because we were afraid that if you're talking about ecotourism and regional small-scale stuff, that one particular course that you set in law as the standard might not be available in a certain area or might not be appropriate. So if the committee is happy with the definition basic first aid, then, you know, that I think it might be workable. I don't know.
All right. Thank you. Representative Porter.
Mr. Chairman, I would not be opposed to trying to work with everybody between leaving here and scheduling at the judiciary to come up with some, you know, maybe this language is good, maybe it isn't, but working with one another to try to work out some language that's a little more common and perhaps a little more appropriate based on the level of activity that the employee has.
So for now, I'd like to have the committee consider the amendment as amended. Insert after basic first aid cardiopulmonary resuscitation.
I'd move the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Are there any objections? Will we get, with the understanding that the next committee referral chairman has indicated that he will take a deeper look at it and make certain that it does what we all want it to do there. All right. Amendment number two, then, as modified, has been adopted. Amendment number three is on page 2, line 13, after person, and this is the one that inserts the participants' children. Page 2, line 31, inserts a new paragraph to read, children means persons under 18 years of age.
We did that one.
Yeah. We did that one? I'm going backwards here.
I think
I'm getting like Brian.
This is premises.
All right, right. The next amendment number three, then, is to take page 3, lines 2-4, and delete all the material. And we indicated that was no longer needed with this draft. Is that correct, staff? Mm-hmm.
So move.
Any objections? Amendment number three is adopted. Then number four, the chair would like to have the committee consider an amendment that on page 3, line 6, after the word pleasure, we delete all after there until the end of line 9, which would mean that item number 3 in definition would read, recreational activity means a supervised commercial outdoor activity undertaken for the purposes of exercise, relaxation, or pleasure, period, and would not have those things that it includes by virtue of the fact that it might exclude those that were not listed. And I don't think we can think of all of the ones that probably should be listed. Representative Porter.
I've got under discussion, or if you want to move it or whatever.
Under discussion.
I've got a couple of concerns. One, I'm not confident that exercise, relaxation, or pleasure would include hunting and fishing, and I'm certainly hearing that that's the intent of the bill. I don't think we would be violating the idea that we would possibly leave something out if we said for the purpose of hunting, fishing, exercise, relaxation, or pleasure.
I don't have any problem with that.
I mean, there's all kinds of hunting, there's all kinds of fishing, and so there's all kinds of exercise.
So the new paragraph 3 would, recreational activity means a supervised commercial outdoor activity undertaken for the purpose of hunting, comma, fishing, comma, exercise, right, relaxation, or pleasure, period. And all the rest would be deleted. I would consider that a friendly amendment. Any, Representative Porter, for discussion, sir?
Yes. On line 5, the term supervised.
Is that going to cover commercial fishing or just sport fishing?
This is recreational.
That's those are the ones. If it's just going fishing,
this would certainly cover guided fishing. Yeah. But it's recreational activity.
Okay, but that's what you're defining. So I just want to make sure it doesn't. I mean, it's questionable whether that would be
fishing,
commercial, and sport fishing because you're defining.
It would cover guided commercial fishing or commercial guided sport fishing. Would be included. That's what it would include. That would be covered.
There isn't any commercial hunting, so I guess sport guided fishing.
Well, there are commercial hunting trips.
Guides.
The guides. No. I mean,
for sale.
You're not out going.
Nobody commercially hunts like they commercially fish. Is what I'm trying to say. So, if you were to say hunting, sport fishing.
That would make me more
comfortable.
Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, that helps. The other term that I question is the term supervise in line 5. My concern is that with this term in there, if there's any guide activities where one of the clients isn't under immediate observation by the guides, that you've blown your supervised, and I don't know if that's a realistic.
Where are you looking at?
Line five.
It says recreational activity means a supervised commercial outdoor activity, and this is what we're defining. I guess my question is: does that mean that the guide has to have their eyes on the guidee at every moment? Which I would guess is impractical.
I would see a lot of loopholes in there.
Yeah, I see. You've got a good point, Brian, especially. Tort reforms will taught you a lot.
Yeah. You're real gun-shy of these little words.
Representative Porter, did you suggest then maybe in definition there means a just strictly deal with the activity and not necessarily... inject the question of whether or not it's supervised or not.
Well, I think commercial implies that it's going to be something perhaps with or through a guide. Otherwise, it's not commercial, it's just sport. But I certainly concur with Brian that supervised, if you could just drop supervised, it seems like you get the same intent.
That's what I was just suggesting, that recreational activity means a commercial outdoor activity.
Yeah. Right.
We deal with the activity and not the people.
I think that's a good point.
All right, so we'll add that to amendment number 4, staff. Have you got that?
I'm thinking about it.
You want to read number 3?
Yes. It would now read, recreational activity means a commercial outdoor activity undertaken for the purpose of hunting, comma, sport fishing, comma, exercise, relaxation, or pleasure, period. And Brian, I'm sure that the people who look at these things will make sure that it all reads correctly here. Are there any objections to then the adoption of amendment number 4 as just revised? Hearing none, amendment number 4 is adopted. That leaves us with the completed action, I believe, on House Bill, now committee substitute for House Bill number 300, Labor and Commerce. I don't believe I have anybody else willing to testify. And God help them if they are. The chair would entertain a motion. Senator Holder.
Mr. Chairman, I would move HB 300 with a company fiscal note, with out of committee with individual recommendations.
As amended. Any objections? Hearing none. So done.
Madam Speaker.
Madam Speaker, yeah. All right. Now comes the big show. Joe, if you work, what we're going to do now is we're going to begin the first testimony on the governor's tax bill on...
Joe likes taxes, so he go for it.
And you need to help me with tonight?
No, I'm not going to do it at all.
tonight.
We're going to.
Sure, I think it's probably a good idea. Would you tell tell her that I'm sorry, but I've got a whole bunch of people testifying here.
Trying to bring it to your attention. You just
yeah, you could tell her that.
No.
I'll include the guy and he wouldn't go. Next, we're going to take up. What are we going to take up? House Bill 413, Alcohol and Tobacco Tax. And it's my understanding the Department of Health and Social Services will be lead off on this. And we'll start out with, let's see, Glenn?
Lauren Jones.
Lauren Jones. Okay, Lauren, come on up. Come on up.
Here you talk about the lateness of the hour. I'll try to be brief. For the record, my name is Lauren Jones. I'm the director of the Division of Alcoholism and Drug Abuse. I'm here today to testify on behalf of House Bill 413, introduced at the request of the governor to raise the taxes on tobacco and alcohol. Our department is in support of this legislation. Glenn Ray is here from the Division of Public Health, who will speak more to the tobacco issues, so I will keep my comments on to the issues around alcohol taxes. Looking at this committee, Representative Porter and Representative Mulder, we met about 5 or 6 days this summer and heard a lot of testimony in different places about the alcohol tax and some of the problems we're having. This bill does raise significantly the taxes, excise taxes on both liquor, wine, and beer. It will raise revenue for the state of Alaska. My division's particular interest in this legislation is its potential effect on the consumption of alcohol. Alaska currently ranks about fourth in the nation in per capita consumption of alcohol as measured by the numbers of taxable gallons sold divided by the population over the age of 14. Our current consumption rate is almost one full gallon more than the national average. We rank number four behind the District of Columbia, the state of Nevada, and the state of New Hampshire. New Hampshire operates and sells all of their liquor from state-operated stores. And they, because of their particular policies, serve almost the entire New England area. They have the least expensive alcohol in Massachusetts, Vermont, Maine, Connecticut, and people have the ability to drive there. So their consumption, it's quite high because consumption is always measured on apparent consumption because it's taxable gallons. You don't know how much is actually consumed. And so we're very supportive of that. The last time the tax was raised was in 1983. Consumption from that year forward in this state has gone down until this last year and when it has started back up. We feel that the tax increase in that year can be directly attributable to that. We feel a lot of other issues also played in, increased prevention activities, work in the schools, but we do believe price had a significant contribution to that entire effort. We also feel that inflation now has taken over on terms of disposable income and the price, and that may explain some of the increase. We would also point out that in this state, surveys that have been done in this state and others indicate that 30 to 35% of the population in this state does not drink. This tax would not affect them. They don't consume. We have 70-some villages and communities.
Are these adult populations?
Yes, adult population. We have 70-some villages that have banned sale and importation. If individuals still purchase, they purchase in more urban centers. So there is that. We also feel that raising the price will have some effect on some youth use. The younger the child, the less likely they have ability to get significant income, and that could significantly decrease their consumption by the price that they may have to pay to have some adult purchase that for them. We know that, understand that this is your first hearing. You want.